This is the last episode of The Session, our weekly breakdown of the policy that's been hurtling through the 67th session of the Montana Legislature. I'm Mara Silvers. I cover the State House for Montana Free Press.
I'm Shaylee Reger. I cover the State House for Montana Public Radio.
I'm Kevin Trevelin. I cover the State House for Yellowstone Public Radio, and I'm a Report for America fellow.
And I'm Eric Dietrich. I also cover the State House for Montana Free Press.
So the legislative session is officially over. Lawmakers formally gaveled out on Thursday afternoon.
I move sine die.
Mr. Speaker, 89 representatives have voted aye, 9 have voted no.
The ayes have it, and so order. The Montana House of Representatives has adjourned sine die for the 67th legislative session.
And at the final tally, 1,313 bills were introduced, and as of our recording on Friday afternoon, at least 302 have been signed into law. This week, we're recapping some of the biggest takeaways from the session. But first, I kind of just want to ask, how is everybody doing?
Mara, I am tired, but I also am feeling relieved. I have to say, after this year, we have all been covering the COVID-19 pandemic, then we covered a historic election, and immediately after that, the legislative session started. And now that it's finally over, I don't know about you, but I feel like I can finally take a breath.
Shaylee, you mentioned COVID. How did COVID end up playing into the legislative session in ways that we expected and didn't expect?
Yeah, it feels like a year ago now, but in December, when lawmakers were preparing to come to the Capitol to begin their legislative session, COVID-19 was still spreading. The vaccine wasn't available yet. It was still very much a concern for people. And the first big fight we saw was over how lawmakers should run the session amid the COVID-19 pandemic. Republican lawmakers declined to accept any of the proposed rules that Democrats brought that aimed to protect public health. And here's Republican Senator Jason Ellsworth talking about that.
I would imagine we are going to have members that are going to get sick. It's possibility to have members that die. But that possibility is there regardless, even if we're here or not. But the one thing we can do is come together and serve the great people of Montana.
Democrats were really frustrated by this. They had proposed a Capitol-wide mask mandate requiring social distancing or even being on Zoom for the entire session. But Democrats were in the minority. Here's Senate Minority Leader Jill Konauer talking about that.
A plan should have been made for people engaging in this, and we should have protocols in our rules for how we will behave as legislators.
I really think that this was the first time that Republicans were able to flex the power that they had won during the November election. They picked up 10 seats in the State House, they won the governor's office, and they were prepared to use that power.
It's worth noting that just because there are a lot of Republicans in the building doesn't always mean that they all get along. And this session has been a little different in that regard from past sessions. Eric, how did that shake out?
Yeah, I've been thinking the last couple of days a lot about where we were 2 years ago at this time as the session was concluding. And, you know, the memory that sticks out of me of the kind of the last day of the 2019 session was then Majority Leader in the House, Brad Cheetah, who basically got up on the House floor and said, like, we haven't gotten along this session.
Our caucuses seemed to become two separate minorities, one of which differed with my values and my beliefs. And I understand, appreciate where they come from, but still, there was that difference.
Yeah, this session, like, they definitely had some disputes over certain things, but on the whole, like, the Republican majority has governed as a Republican majority and kind of left the Dems out in the cold more often than not.
They kind of had to have that Republican unity if they wanted to really sell voters on the idea that they were going to deliver on this mandate that they said that they got in the 2020 elections, as Shaylee mentioned. Kevin, when they started the session, what were they talking about in terms of that mandate, and how did that change over the course of 90 days?
Yeah, so before the session, Republicans highlighted a mandate to create jobs and jumpstart Montana's economy after the pandemic had shut things down. And that certainly stayed a major talking point throughout the session surrounding the suite of tax cut bills that Republicans shepherded through the process, for example. But it really seemed to be within the context of the Republican-led legislature kind of reasserting its power after 16 years of Democratic governance in the executive branch. And during a farewell speech after Sine Die, Senator Kerry Smith, a Republican from Billings, said that Republicans were finally able to pass policies that former Democratic executives had vetoed. And that didn't just include economic policies. It also included a lot of social bills, like limiting access to abortion, for example. But Smith also lamented what he called the tyranny of former Democratic Governor Steve Bullock's administration, which had laid down restrictions to stop the spread of COVID-19 last year. And Republican lawmakers had said that Bullock didn't do a good enough job seeking their input on those restrictions. So Smith said during this session, Republicans brought Montana out of the pandemic, and he really framed the relationship with Republican Governor Gianforte as kind of a new day in Montana.
We passed legislation that released the mandate that had kept us locked up for months. We're free. We're free again. Let us protect that freedom. Let's continue on the course we've already taken.
Which is, of course, exactly how the governor frames himself coming in, too. How did the session go for minority Democrats, Mara?
They came in deep in the minority and really realizing that they had lost an essential bartering tool that they had had before by having a veto pen. And so throughout the course of the session, they acknowledged that they were playing a lot of defense on bills that they didn't want to have passed, but they've said that their fingerprints are all over big policy bills like the marijuana implementation bill, the state's primary budget bill. And then also this year, the Democratic caucus will say that their members were influential in figuring out how Montana is going to handle the American Rescue Plan Act and really put those dollars to good use. And then I think it's worth saying that Democrats really did play aggressive defense on a couple of bills they wanted to make sure did not make it out of the state house this session. That included those big labor bills that would have weakened unions, as well as a bill that would have significantly changed how public assistance programs work in the state. Those were two efforts that they fought tooth and nail, and they didn't make it out.
Another huge piece of legislation that saw tons of debate this session was the policy that would regulate and tax recreational marijuana in the state, which was legalized by voters in November. Kevin, you really tracked all of the work lawmakers did on that front.
Yeah, so there was a ton of meetings and hearings and debate on all kinds of bills. There was a special committee created to figure out that system. Lawmakers ended up with a policy that most of them at least seem okay with. But hanging over recreational marijuana all session was the state's rocky past with medical marijuana. And voters also passed that by initiative in the early 2000s. And there weren't a ton of regulations surrounding it initially, so the program kind of got out of hand. And we eventually had federal raids in Montana at medical dispensaries. And so as this recreational marijuana policy neared the finish line, Representative Mike Hopkins, a Missoula Republican who sponsored the big framework, said that he and other lawmakers really had that in mind. They wanted to create a safe, secure program that wouldn't require the legislature to come back and adjust really significantly 2 years from now.
So, Kevin, if a Montanan would like to participate in the recreational marijuana market, how would they go about that and how does that actually work?
So Montanans have already been able to possess and use marijuana since January. They've also been able to grow their own cannabis. And under this new framework that's coming online soon, they'll be able to grow two plants each. As far as retail sales go, counties that did not support the November initiative that legalized marijuana will have to hold an election if they want to opt into allowing dispensaries. And the program is set to come online in remaining counties January 2022. Marijuana industry leaders were worried about big companies coming in and cornering the cannabis market. So lawmakers took that into account and included provisions in the framework to give current medical providers exclusive rights to get recreational licenses for the program's first 18 months. There's also a tier system to prevent providers from coming into business with massive shops right off the bat or upscaling too fast. Lawmakers really prioritized a sort of gradual approach to ramping this program up.
And the state is going to tax marijuana sales. So where will that revenue go?
That was one of the major areas of contention as this bill worked its way through the legislative process. There's going to be a 20% tax on recreational marijuana with a local option tax for counties, which is intended to provide them some extra funding to deal with any increased costs that may come from managing recreational dispensaries within their boundaries. And a lot of that tax revenue will go into the state general fund. Some will also go to veteran services and projects tied to parks, trail maintenance, and non-game wildlife habitat. The Habitat Montana Conservation Program will also get a new funding source after the cannabis program gets up and running. So that was a major priority for Democrats to get the bill closer to the November initiative. And $6 million each year will also go to an addiction recovery program spearheaded by Governor Gianforte's office. Mara, I understand you've been following the Heart Fund.
Right. So this has been the governor's effort to essentially use special revenue from marijuana, from tobacco tax revenue, from a tobacco settlement, and from Medicaid funds to fill out what they call the continuum of care. So that means prevention, treatment, recovery, intensive care. So even though this isn't a new issue, this is a new approach. I asked the Department of Public Health and Human Services what it means that this $6 million from marijuana revenue has now been carved out for the Heart Fund. They sent back a quick statement. They're excited about the potential for the Heart Fund, and they're going to be meeting internally to discuss next steps.
Kevin, revenue was one of the big sticking points by the end of the session. Wasn't all that work almost upended?
It was. Throughout the session, conservative lawmakers had been uncomfortable with the idea of starting new programs like the Heart Fund with cannabis revenue. And they were also skeptical that that revenue would actually rise to levels forecasted by legislative staffers. They also thought the 20% tax rate on recreational marijuana might lead to customers instead turning toward the black market. So there was an effort right before Sine died to significantly change the framework using another marijuana bill that hadn't yet made it through the process. Republicans were trying to divert a sizable chunk of the tax revenue to a new trust fund to deal with what they called the unspecified economic and social costs of legalization. And that effort was actually successful in the House, but moderate Republicans were able to join with Democrats to kill it in the Senate. And lawmakers on the left were still upset that Republicans had tried to torpedo a framework that was previously championed by both sides as a bipartisan success. Here's Great Falls Democratic Senator Tom Jacobson talking about that effort after Sine die.
We all had to give a little bit to get this done, and we all had to respect everybody. And at the end, I think both sides of the aisle, we put aside our ideologies. And we rolled up our sleeves and we got done the best thing that we could.
So one of the other big things that the legislature worked on was the state budget. Shaylee, where did that end up in a big picture sense?
This is a two-year, $12 billion budget that is a roughly 2.5% increase over the last session. That's a smaller increase than other recent budgets, but it's also important to know that other recent budgets didn't have a $2 billion windfall from the federal government that we saw this session from the American Rescue Plan Act. But Republicans are touting this as a good conservative budget, and they were really unified in getting it across the finish line.
So the budget was passed through Republican majorities, but how did the Democrats come down on it?
So all Democrats in the House ended up voting against the budget, but Republicans were really unified on endorsing it. We even saw Republican Governor Greg Gianforte put out a press release calling it a responsible spending plan.
So that's a pretty strong indication that the governor is going to be signing the budget bill that the legislature passed.
Yeah, I think that's true. I will say that the governor put out a proposed budget in January, as all governors do before a legislative session, with his own priorities and how he thinks the government should spend taxpayer dollars. And the budget that the legislature passed proposes spending about $160 million less than what Gianforte proposed. But in the grand scheme of things, that's pretty minor.
And so, like, one of the things we were hearing from Democrats in both the run-up to the election and, you know, in the beginning of the session was, hey, you give Republicans unified control of the State House, we're going to end up with sweeping cuts to social services. Did we see that?
Democrats made a lot of noise at the beginning of the session because Republicans had a procedural move that they used that looked as if it would decrease the state health department's budget by $1 billion. But by the end of the session, all of that money was restored. Republicans said they had done that to try to get a better understanding of the budget itself. And we saw a budget that kept most programs intact.
And Democrats did want a little bit more spending for certain social services and health services, didn't they?
There was quite a bit of debate over $1 million that was cut for suicide prevention programs. There was quite a bit of debate over a $2.4 million cut to a program that helps child care providers. We also saw some last-minute changes that Democrats were also opposed to. For example, in the last week of the session, Republicans added $285,000 into their budget to pay for an investigation into the judicial branch over allegations of bias and misconduct. Democrats say that investigation is unnecessary and a violation of the separation of powers among the three branches of government. There is another amendment added onto the budget that lays out the intent by the legislature to eliminate a rule called continuous eligibility, in which enrollees in the Montana Medicaid expansion program can stay enrolled in that health coverage for a year before their eligibility is checked again. So with the elimination of that rule, the state health department would be able to set the time length between eligibility checks at whatever they want. It is important to remember there that the federal government will have to approve that change before it can go into effect.
And didn't new tax policy also play a big role in the budget, Eric?
They did. We've been talking about the spending side of the budget, but there's also the revenue side of the picture. And tax cuts have, of course, been a centerpiece of Gianforte's agenda, both on the campaign trail and since he took office. Republicans have touted their efforts to cut taxes. That includes, you know, most notably a cut to the top income tax rate. They're also going to exempt more businesses from paying the state equipment tax. And then also they're setting up a program that will exempt Montana entrepreneurs from paying capital gains taxes when they start businesses and build them and then cash out. That'll be kind of a longer term thing. The criticism and the argument for these is that most of them are targeted at higher earners and business owners. The theory there is that those are people that are likely to come to the state or stay in the state and build businesses here and create jobs and boost the economy for everybody. Whereas Democrats have pushed for tax cuts that focus more on direct aid to middle and lower income Montanans. So it's worth noting that we have two things going on here. And there's the state budget proper, which is a fairly conservative Republican passed budget. And then also billions of dollars coming into the state from the American Rescue Plan Act, the latest round of federal coronavirus stimulus money that was passed by congressional Democrats, actually over opposition from congressional Republicans in D.C. And so we have this combination of conservative fiscal policy and liberal fiscal policy in our state right now. And it's going to be fascinating to see how that plays out in terms of its impact on the economy in the coming years.
The legislature passed a massive framework to appropriate the federal stimulus money. It totals around $2 billion with a B. And it's complicated and it's tied to other policies that made it through the legislative session. Can you break down how that works, Eric?
So there are multiple buckets for infrastructure in the stimulus money bill. The biggest one is actually a $463 million pot of money for water and sewer projects. That money will be distributed to local governments via grants. And actually, that's kind of a mind-boggling number. So $463 million, you divide that between the number of residents in the state, and it's like $430 for each of us. And then there's also another $119 million in there for building out state-owned buildings, so you know, like labs on university campuses and stuff like that. And then there's also broadband money in the bill as well. And representatives of both parties are talking about this stimulus bill as like kind of a once in a generation opportunity to invest in the state. Here's Representative Jim Keena Butte on the House floor.
What you're hearing is opportunity knocking. That's what you're hearing with 632. It's an opportunity the state of Montana hasn't ever had in my time in the legislature.
And a caveat with this whole discussion, despite this spending plan setting the stage to distribute millions of dollars to communities over the next couple years, states around the country are still, at this point, waiting for guidelines on how the federal relief dollars can actually be spent. So to make sure the legislature still has power with those decisions in the interim, the state plan sets up advisory commissions made up of lawmakers and governor appointees to oversee different areas of spending. For example, lawmakers will have authority to approve projects related to health or broadband or economic stabilization, among other things. And this ties back to another contention that Republican lawmakers had with former Democratic Governor Bullock's administration that he didn't seek their input enough on how to distribute prior rounds of federal COVID aid.
I want to jump in here. Obviously, fiscal policy was a huge part of this session, but we also saw tons of social policy bills. Mara, you tracked a lot of the bills that would impact Montana's LGBTQ population. Can you talk me through what those are and what they would do?
Just to set the scene, usually in past sessions, there might be one or two bills that advocates for LGBTQ civil rights are really looking at aggressively or trying to fight. And this session was really different in that regard. There were a handful of these bills. So essentially, we had two bills that would have affected transgender youth specifically. One would have made it so that transgender women and girls aren't allowed to participate on women's sports teams. And then we also had another bill that was a sweeping ban on transgender medical care for young people. And then finally, there was another bill that would make it substantially more difficult for somebody to change the gender that's listed on their birth certificate. So even though those bills saw different fates, the birth certificate bill and the trans athlete restriction bill have both passed while the medical bans did not make it. Overall, it felt like it was a defining theme of this session, both in how many bills there were, but also how hard some of the lobbyists who were fighting these bills felt like they had to work to even explain these issues to a lot of Montana lawmakers who had never heard of some of these topics before.
Yeah, and in terms of opposition to these bills, we saw the coalition lobbying against them really grow throughout the session. What kind of arguments did they make to lawmakers?
So I think because there were so many different types of bills, there was a lot of different types of opposition to all of these measures. There were huge medical associations nationally and in Montana, influential hospitals, education associations, including the Montana University System, business alliances, and individual business owners who are all pummeling lawmakers with an outpouring of opposition. There was one lawmaker who said that she received approximately 4,000 text messages, phone calls, and emails against a couple of the bills that were before her in committee.
Another bill that saw lots of opposition from LGBTQ advocates was a state version of the Religious Freedom Restoration Act.
Yeah, so this is a type of legislation that's been passed in many other states. Basically, it would allow individuals or groups to use their religious beliefs as a legal defense in court if they want to be exempt from a certain law or policy. Proponents of these bills will say is only fair for the freedom of the exercise of religion. Opponents were very vocal in saying that if you start prioritizing the religious beliefs of any group of people, that could risk interfering with the civil rights of other people, including LGBTQ Montanans who may face increased discrimination on religious grounds. It was passed. It was signed into law by the governor. But Shaylee, I think that's a good bill to focus on because it is part of a broader trend of conservative Christian social issues that were front and center during this legislative session. And of course, one of the cornerstones of the Republican Party for a long time in Montana has been the issue of abortion and reproductive issues. What kind of legislation did we see this session about that topic?
Republican lawmakers brought a slate of bills that would restrict access to abortion this session. And just last week, Republican Governor Greg Gianforte signed three of those bills into law. It was one of the largest bill signing ceremonies we saw this session. Quite a few Republican lawmakers came out and stood behind the governor on the Capitol steps as he signed these bills into law.
In addition to being a beautiful day here in Montana, it's a promising day, a day that will go down in our state's history as we defend life. Yeah. Today we are taking action to protect the most vulnerable amongst us, the unborn.
One would prohibit abortions at 20 weeks and later. Another would require physicians to offer their patients a viewing of their ultrasounds before an abortion. And a third would regulate how doctors can prescribe and how women can get medication abortions in the state. In talking about these policies, not all of them directly stop abortions from happening. For example, the bill that requires that patients are offered a viewing of their ultrasound is carried by Representative Amy Regeer, a Republican from Kalispell. That doesn't stop abortions from happening, but Regeer said during the bill signing last week that it could discourage women from getting an abortion.
Many who have sought an abortion, and even some who have performed them, have changed their minds after visibly seeing what is in the womb.
Republican majority legislators have been passing a variety of bills to restrict access to abortion over roughly the last two decades, but we've had Democratic governors in office for 16 years who have vetoed those policies. While Republican Governor Gianforte was campaigning for office, he said that he supports restricting access to abortion, that he is anti-abortion, and so it was very clear from when he won election to office that this would be something that he would support.
Opponents of these bills have said that many of them on their face are unconstitutional because Montana's courts have routinely said the ability to access an abortion is protected under Montana's right to privacy. And so while there is court precedence that spells that out, when that issue came up in committee hearings, we heard again and again many Republican lawmakers who said the issue of unconstitutionality should not prohibit us from passing bills. And if something is unconstitutional, basically, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. And I think that that just intersects with this theme that we've heard again and again throughout the session, that the legislature has been wanting to kind of flex its powers in its role as a distinct branch of government.
We heard that sentiment expressed by legislative leaders in closing statements last week. For example, here is Senate President Mark Blaisdell at a press conference.
One of the things I'm proud of, too, is we stood up for the legislative branch. We said, you know what? We are one of the equal parts in government.
Kevin, to that point about the legislature kind of exerting more control, another example of that was kind of related to a different culture war that we're seeing across the country. And that's the reliability of election systems and how voters can access the polls.
Yeah, Republicans shepherded some fairly consequential changes to how people vote through the legislature, and county elections officials say this will require some serious voter education efforts. Two of the most high-profile bills got rid of same-day voter registration and changed which types of ID are acceptable to vote. So a college photo ID is no longer okay by itself, but a concealed carry permit is under the new law. And during his post-sign-e-die press conference, Governor Gianforte said these changes are needed to protect the integrity of Montana elections and also easing the burden on county elections workers, especially on election day, so that they're not swamped with new voter applications as they're taking in ballots.
It just makes sense. We want to know that people are voting are the people that they say they are. These are common sense reforms. We've seen them in many states, and they make sense for Montana as well.
It's worth noting that there were really no proven cases of widespread voter fraud. In the sessions last week, Republicans also revived a policy prohibiting someone from collecting someone else's absentee ballot if they receive any kind of monetary benefit. Indigenous Get Out the Vote groups in particular say that disrupts a hugely important voting method on rural reservations, where residents often lack easy mail access and transportation to polling places. We've already seen an illegal challenge from the Montana Democratic Party to the voter ID and same-day registration bills, so there could be similar litigation on the ballot collection policy if the governor signs it into law.
Speaking of litigation, one of the other big things that came up late in the session is a spat between the legislative branch and the judiciary that's likely going to be adjudicating all the court challenges to these controversial laws. And we've already been talking about the court system a fair bit at the legislature over the last month, as Republicans have questioned whether the judiciary is equipped to fairly sort out which laws are and aren't constitutional.
Right, Eric, this is something that we're going to watch play out over the interim. It's still an unresolved issue. And it began with Republican Attorney General Austin Knutson releasing some emails that show judges and justices are pulled on pending legislation that directly affects courts. And lawmakers are worried that means judges and justices can't fairly judge challenges to laws that they pass. So lawmakers have formed a special select committee to investigate the judiciary, and they say they're going to carry out that investigation through the next 2 years.
And on a somewhat similar note, one of the other forward-looking things to watch is the state's redistricting commission, which takes 2020 census data and will redraw legislative districts and also divide the state into two U.S. House districts now that we've grown enough to win back our second U.S. House seat. That's a five-member commission where the fifth tiebreaker vote is appointed by the judiciary. And so there was a dispute in the closing days of the legislative session whether lawmakers could adopt a provision spelling out how the districting commission had to go about drawing those U.S. House boundaries. The counterargument there is the state constitution may give that commission independent power to do its own thing regardless of what the legislature wants. So that could be finding its way into court as well.
I think it's fair to say that we're all going to be pretty busy. Even though the legislative session has ended, there's going to be a lot of news to cover in the next couple of months. Kevin, Shaylee, Eric, thanks for your reporting this session.
Happy to be here.
It's been a real pleasure.
Yeah, I've so enjoyed working together. Thanks.
This has been The Session, a weekly preview of the action at the Montana State House during the 2021 legislative session, featuring Shaylee Rager from Montana Public Radio, Kevin Trevlin from Yellowstone Public Radio, Eric Dietrich from Montana Free Press, and I'm Mara Silvers, also from Montana Free Press. We've been edited and produced by the amazing Corin Cates Carney of MTPR and Nikki Willette of YPR. Huge thanks to both of them, and thank you all for listening.